Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love, brought to you by Captain Geek and usually the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will, and I am a guy who lives in Los Angeles, who has worked in the film industry on a number of film productions, and for a time, for a few years, as a development executive at a small production company. And we are privileged to have with us today three special guests to talk to us. First is returning guest Amanda, a freelance journalist with an affinity for nerd culture. Welcome back, Amanda.
Hi, everybody. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. We had such a great episode last time. And Megan, we have Megan returning, who is a podcast host and horror movie aficionado. Welcome back, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello, everybody.
Hello. And we have a new guest joining us today, Jessica, who by day is a social worker and trauma therapist, but by night, an RPG designer and writer. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I am excited to have you here. And I would just want to say right now, you know, we're going to talk about your work just a little bit at the very end. But everybody should go online and buy her role-playing game supplements right away.
Just do that. I need the money.
Just want to mention that. No, you have great stuff. I've taken a look at it, and I'm a big... I've been in, you know, playing D&D for like 30 years or something like that. So, okay. So today we are talking about Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel. And we titled the episode Wonder Woman versus Captain Marvel. But this is not really in the sense of, you know, who would win in a fight. Although, you know, we're going to kind of touch on that briefly. It's just more about comparing the two movies and how they dealt with, you know, having the lead character as a woman superhero, which, as I think we all know, is not an incredibly common thing in superhero movies. And it looks like, you know, we're entering a phase, you know, of the movie industry where it looks like that's starting to change. But as two of the biggest, you know, women-led superhero movies, really up to this point in history, we thought it would be interesting to talk about how they compare and what they can learn from each other and that sort of thing. So strap yourselves in. One of the things we like to do with this podcast is bring together different people with different opinions and different perspectives to talk about things. And so with that said, together in this episode, we are Mecha Dragon. Woohoo! Good
I
huddle team.
I did not mute myself in time. I must
good. Have. Should we do it again?
And I'll form the heart.
Yes, I love it. We're like Voltron. So okay, so let's just get down to it here, shall we? I want to start with Megan this time, and just ask briefly, what are your thoughts about the recent Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman movies? And I know we just talked a lot about Captain Marvel, so you know, don't have to get too much into that one. But just what do you think of these two movies?
Well, first of all, I'm furious that that this isn't actually an episode of Death Battle. I thought we were going to talk about these two fighting to the death. No, I'm totally kidding. I very much enjoyed both of these movies. My big thing, though, is that I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, took you guys long enough? Jeez, how many Batman and Superman movies did we have to go through before we got a Wonder Woman movie? Boo.
Thank you.
And Marvel, how many movies starring a white guy named Chris did we get before we finally got one starring a woman? What the heck, guys? I know that that's not, like, those comments are not anything new. those aren't original comments or anything new. But just all of that nonsense aside, both of these movies were a ton of fun. And, like, I just wholeheartedly enjoyed them. And I rewatched them recently in preparation for this podcast. And I feel like I enjoy them more and more the more I watch them. I have a greater and greater appreciation, because when you first go into the theater, you have like all these expectations because there haven't been that many female-led superhero movies. And though these ones aren't the first ones, they're certainly the most commercially successful. And so going into both of them, there were all these expectations, and like it's kind of not fair to have to expect, because again, we don't have that many female-led superhero movies out there. It almost is a little bit unfair to be like, okay, well, each of these movies has to be like the pinnacle, like they have to be good role models. They have to do this. They have to do this. They have to meet all these standards that we wouldn't put on other types of superhero movies because we just have so many of them. And so it's hard when you're going into the theater and you're putting all those expectations on both of these films. So like I said, the more and more I watch them, the more and more I appreciate them for what they are.
Yeah, I think that's such an important observation that, you know, I agree with you that it would be a mistake to try and, you know, say that each of these movies or any single, you know, superhero movie with a leading woman has to be like everything to everyone, or each one has
to represent all women.
Right. Or they have to like make the most money in the world, or they have to, you know, I think it's just, because you're right, that's not a standard that would be applied to, you know, other superhero movies like a Batman movie or, you know, any of these other movies like a Thor movie or whatever it is. So next, Jessica, can you tell us briefly your thoughts on these two movies?
I was so nervous for both of these movies and very pleased with both of them. I am a big dork for comics, and Wonder Woman was my girl since I was very little. I used to watch the Linda Carter show on TV and pretend to be Wonder Woman. I wasn't allowed to have action figures as a kid, but I think it was either McDonald's or Pizza Hut had these mugs where like the handles were Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So I would use a friggin' mug as a toy. And my Wonder Woman mug would go save my other toys. And yeah, I've read Wonder Woman comics since way back. And I was in the No Man's Land scene. I was just a tearful mess. I cried my face off in that scene.
That was a powerful scene, wasn't
it? Yeah. And as an adult, like I've loved Captain Marvel and Squirrel Girl and Ms. Marvel, and I was very excited to see Captain Marvel. And I wish that I could go into a whole thing on how they coded her as a lesbian but didn't let her be a lesbian in this one, and she's not in the comics, but that's fine. Just if she's gonna be gay in the movie, let her be gay. That would be nice. And I don't know. I could talk about that movie forever. I thought the nod to Monica Rambeau was really nice for old fans of the character. For anybody who doesn't know, Monica was another Ms. Marvel before Carol Danvers was Ms. Marvel and eventually Captain Marvel. So we can get into that later. But I really liked both movies. I was so terrified for both of them. And I left the theater really happy. And I saw them both twice, I think, in the theater.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds like you're a true comics fan if you're using mugs as superhero toys. And yeah. I appreciate that. No, that's great. That's great. And I think I would like to actually do an episode on Squirrel Girl one day. The unbeatable Squirrel Girl, right?
Oh, my God. I will be here for that episode.
Great. So, Amanda, briefly, what did you think of these two films?
So I'm in the same boat as Jessica. I was definitely apprehensive about them. And for the same reason that Meg brought up, this idea that, you know, because we haven't had a lot of titular female superhero, you know, mega films, we have to kind of expect them to carry the burden of womanhood. And I also was really genuinely pleased with them, more so with Wonder Woman coming out than I did coming out of Captain Marvel. And now I feel like, you know, years later, and I mentioned to Will ahead of the podcast that it feels like 2017 was the good old days at this point. But it feels like such a long time ago, but I kind of feel like it's flopped for me. I kind of prefer the Captain Marvel film to Wonder Woman, and I'll explain why later, but I just think that they're so different and they were made so differently that I really enjoy looking at them as a pair, but I definitely still like both of them just for entirely different reasons.
Yeah, they're very different movies with very different characters and approaches to those characters and, you know, their whole character arc and everything. And I largely agree with what the three of you are saying. I mean, I really enjoyed both of these movies. I thought it was so refreshing when Wonder Woman came out because, you know, it did come out first. And I've loved Wonder Woman. I used to watch the Linda Carter show when I was, you know, when I was a kid. And I was really happy that she finally got her own movie. And I think it was Jessica mentioned the No Man's Land scene. I actually got chills when I was watching that again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Diana to me is this great character because of the... For one, because of all the ideals that she kind of embodies. And that was sort of, in a way, that was her in her most, in her purest form, right? Is that whole scene where she says, I'm using a bad metaphor here, but damn the torpedoes. And she, you know, runs across the field and just takes care of it. In any case, you know, I think this is probably the third or fourth episode of this show where I've talked about Captain Marvel. But suffice it to say that I really did enjoy that movie, too. And it's not my top, like, MCU film by any means. And I think there's a lot of room for improvement in the sequel, which we talked about at length in our last episode. It is one of those films that when I watch it, every time I watch it, I do appreciate it a little bit more. I see something a little bit more. I kind of appreciate the structure of it a little bit more. And when we get into comparing them, I do have some thoughts that I want to share and get your reactions on. So now that we've just kind of talked about our general impressions of the movies, I want to start with Amanda here, because you kind of mentioned that you enjoyed one more than the other one. And I want to get a sense of why that was and, you know, what about those two movies made you kind of prefer one to the other or enjoy one of them more?
Sure. I think, okay, so 3 years ago when Wonder Woman came out, I left the theater so excited about this movie, and I kept railing against my superhero nerd friends who were kind of on the fence about it, because I was like, oh, it's about a woman, though. Like, we finally get a film about Wonder Woman, about a female superhero who isn't dependent on all these other dudes. Come on, you gotta, like, give me something. And I still feel that way, but I feel like, as a film, if we look at it from the perspective of, yes, it has to make money, but also what kind of film it is. Watching it again last night, I feel very much that Wonder Woman was made to be a cinematic piece of film, not a superhero movie, not a niche, this is for a certain kind of audience movie. It's very much a gorgeous piece of cinema. And I think that opinion is reflected in the fact that it got such positive reviews across the board. And as much as I don't like Rotten Tomatoes, I don't love aggregation sites, because every critic is welcome to their own opinion, but in a mass, it doesn't mean anything. Just looking at that score compared to Captain Marvel, I think just shows that this was made to be a mass appeal movie. And I think in that sense, it did a good job. And I say that as a person who generally does not like DCU movies. I think most of them are trash. I will stand by that 100%. Come get me, Zack Snyder. And I think that this was their attempt at, like, hey, look, we can make movies too. And I wonder how much of that is because it had a female director, and it was, I think her name is Patty.
Patty Jenkins.
Yeah,
Patty
there we Jenkins. Go. So Patty Jenkins had to direct this first major cinematic piece of female superhero-dom, and she was gonna do it, hell or high water, and it is a really beautiful movie. It's not my favorite superhero movie, but I think that, like, a superhero movie is an entirely different genre in and of itself. But as a piece of film, I think Wonder Woman is just unbelievably gorgeous. And it gives us so much depth, and it gives us so much wonderful backstory and makes Wonder Woman really interesting for a general audience. Whereas I think Captain Marvel is much more our standard cookie cutter kind of superhero movie in the best way that you can mean cookie cutter superhero movie. It was just following the MCU tradition. It's very much an MCU movie.
Sure.
But in that way, I think it's just different than Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is just unbelievably gorgeous.
I think that's really interesting, your observation about Wonder Woman being directed more at a general audience versus Captain Marvel kind of being not only directed at, but really marketed toward, you know, women specifically. I mean, that's not to say that it doesn't have appeal for a general audience and or men or whatever it is. But I think that really in the marketing, you see how they're stressing, you know, the different story points and the different, you know, aspects of the character. And I kind of wonder how that played into ultimately, you know, the scores that they would get on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. Because we talked in the last episode a little bit about how it seemed like a lot of the quote-unquote outrage online about Captain Marvel felt really manufactured.
Well, it was kind of more against Brie Larson than against the movie itself.
Yes, yeah.
And it was such
that
a niche
one quote she had at the press junket, right? Okay, so thank you, Amanda. So, Jessica, what are your thoughts on which one you enjoyed more and why that is, and maybe any responses to Amanda?
Generally, whichever one I like more is whichever one I am watching at the moment. And before watching them, you know, back to back for today, I was positive I liked Wonder Woman more because I have more history with Wonder Woman. And I was like, well, of course I like Wonder Woman. It has the mascara and it's just the better movie. But this time I really liked Captain Marvel more. The themes make sense. It has an arc that doesn't get... okay, let me make sense. This, I love Wonder Woman so much, but I feel like there was something from the producers where they threw in Ares to have a big Snyder-style fight at the end.
Mm.
And Wonder Woman has very few great villains. One of them is Ares, and it would be so nice to have him as a recurring villain or like not even in her first movie, but definitely not as a big boss fight. And I feel like her whole movie is her coming to terms with, you know, who she is, becoming more than just an Amazon and realizing that humans have flaws, but they're still worth her energy. And then her statement at the end where she's like, I believe in love, is, I mean, Wonder Woman does believe in love, but it kind of comes out of nowhere. The fight with Ares comes out of nowhere. And it sort of sends a mixed message at the end, whereas Captain Marvel has a more coherent arc. It's really interesting watching them back to back because they both start with both women, apart from the very opening scene in Wonder Woman. It's the framing device of her at the Louvre. In Captain Marvel, it's her dream. But the next scene is both of the characters wanting to fight. So it's showing them doing something that we think of as typically masculine. It's like, hey, these girls are action girls. And then the rest of the movies are them becoming who they are, as opposed to other heroes like... You see Superman, he's Superman the whole time, except for in the Snyder movie that we don't talk about. You see Batman, he's Batman the whole time. The first thing he says in Michael Keaton's Batman is, I'm Batman.
Yeah.
Like, I'm Batman, and you're going to tell everyone you know that I'm Batman.
Yeah. But both of these movies are these characters learning to be who they are. Like Thor's movie is, who is Thor when he's not Thor? But both of these are like, who is Wonder Woman? They don't even call her that. Who is Captain Marvel? Both of them have been lied to their whole lives. Both of them don't know the true extent of their powers. Like, this isn't them suddenly getting a power and being like, oh, what can I do? Like Peter Parker. This is them discovering who they really are. And with Captain Marvel learning that, or coming to terms with the fact that, you know, she gets knocked down over and over and always gets up. And when she says, I don't have anything to prove to you, oh, it's so cathartic. And I love that so much more than I believe in love. And I'm not going to throw a tank on Dr. Poison, who I've never even seen. It just makes more sense as an overarching plot to me. Sorry, that was really long.
No, that's a great answer. And I, you know, I also was thinking about those really interesting parallels in the stories between them, you know, and I started thinking about, you know, you did mention that they were both lied to and they were both sort of held back. And I started thinking, well, that's a really interesting parallel. But also, you know, I think that it was a lot more toxic for Carol.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, gaslight.
Diana is essentially being protected by parental figures, in a sense.
Right.
Right.
She has like a helicopter mom versus a gaslighting, abusive boyfriend.
Exactly. And so I think the parallels are definitely still there. But I do like how they explored, each movie explored those, you know, similar concepts in a totally different way. So I wanted to just mention that. So, okay. So, Megan, which one did you enjoy more, if any, and why is that?
It's funny because I think after our Captain Marvel discussion last time, I was like, oh yeah, Captain Marvel is the superior film. And I rewatched that first in preparation for this. And after I finished rewatching Captain Marvel, same thing as Jess said, it felt very cathartic at the end. And I was like, oh, this is so good. But then I rewatched Wonder Woman, and the feeling of watching Wonder Woman in the theater came back to me. Mm. And I have to, like, I will go back and forth on it for sure. Like, if you ask me at a different point in time, like a month from now, I might have a different answer. But in this exact moment, I do feel like Wonder Woman is the superior film. And I think maybe part of the reason for that is that I came in harsher on Captain Marvel because Wonder Woman was so good. And and I was a little origin story burned out when Captain Marvel came out.
Yeah, I think we all are at this point.
But that being said, you know, both movies are fantastic and I very much enjoy them both. Wonder Woman, though, I think I have to give it to not only because it's a beautiful film, but I also really like period piece, like, kind of, I like the period piece superhero film. Like, I like
technically both of them are.
I mean,
which is nice.
Well, yeah. But like,
but I hear
okay, you're making me feel old, Will.
I'm probably older than you.
I was gonna say, you bring up an excellent point because there's an entire sequence where she's just walking around a Blockbuster, and that is, right, in fact, a relic of the past. Oh man, now I'm old too. But no, the, like, I really like the period piece of, like, the early 1920s, the early 1900s, during World War I. And I know that there are a lot of parallels between these two movies, but in all honesty, I see Wonder Woman more having more in common with actually Captain America's origin story than I do with Captain Marvel, just by virtue of it being a war story. And I concur that Captain Marvel's plot is, or her arc is more cohesive. I 100% agree that I believe in love. I believe in a thing called love. Just listen to the rhythm of my heart comes out of nowhere. I do find that a little silly and a little cheesy, but like, overall, I really like the themes that Wonder Woman touches on, like, because not only is it an origin story for her, but it's also touching on themes of war and humanity, and it's Diana having to encounter things like sexism and racism and PTSD and just all of these things that she would have never been exposed to on the island. And out of the two, and granted, Carol has to come to terms with those things as well, because she has to come to terms with the fact that she's working for the bad guys who aren't fighting a war. They are essentially committing acts of genocide against a group of refugees, which, you know, that's a lot to come to terms with. But in a weird way, I don't feel like it doesn't feel as lofty as it does in Wonder Woman. It doesn't feel as heart-wrenching as it does in Wonder Woman for some reason. I don't know why, but
in Wonder Woman, you do get to see those like tableaus of war and people injured and children crying as bombs fall and things like that.
Yeah,
that makes an
you're
an
kind
impact.
Of seeing it in real time,
mm-hmm.
And with Captain Marvel, you're more seeing the aftermath of like how relieved Talos is to be reunited with his family, and like. So in some ways, like both are personal stories dealing with war, but with Wonder Woman, you're kind of seeing it more in real time as opposed to having to come to terms with it after the fact. But but yeah, they're both really good. But I have to give it to Wonder Woman because Wonder Woman actually brought me to tears, and it actually wasn't No Man's Land that brought me to tears, although that is by far the best part of the film. Like, I actually, no joke, guys, got really teary-eyed during the first attack on Themyscira, because it was the first time it like ever occurred to me that I was watching a film where women were fighting in a way that wasn't objectifying them.
Oh.
And like, I didn't even realize that's what I was about to watch, and like, so I don't know, and that realization in the theater just really moved me. I was just,
wow. And it's not... even down to like their armor too, right? Because they're not wearing like the fantasy, you know, video game, like, I'm going to show my midriff even though people are trying to stab me.
Yeah, no, just the fact that they weren't, like, that it wasn't being shot for the male gaze. Like, like, I realized in real time that that's not what I was looking at in the theater, and it moved me to tears. And I'm a little embarrassed to admit that, but it's true.
No, I think it's an important observation. And that's, I think, one of the many reasons that it's important to have, you know, women filmmakers in, you know, in control of executing these pieces. Right. Did you have anything else you were going to add?
Oh, just we'll talk about them both more. But I do, I can't emphasize enough that I really enjoy them both. And if the things I have to say about Captain Marvel, you know, would sound a little repetitive because Amanda and Jess sort of already touched on them.
Yes, very eloquently, I might add. Here's what I thought, and I kind of, so I want to hear what y'all think about this, but first of all, it was kind of hard for me to say which one I enjoy more because they're so different, these movies,
very
from each other.
Very much so, yeah.
You know, in genre, in tone, in treatment of material, and character, but I am tempted to say that Wonder Woman is a better movie in general, more well-constructed, but I think that the ending of Captain Marvel is the stronger of the two.
I agree.
Thank you. So in John Truby's book, The Anatomy of Story, which I don't know if anybody's read, but I'm a writer and I'm very much into story craft. And so I read this book, which is one of my favorites. He describes in this book 7 key steps of story structure. And the step that after, like, the final climactic battle, he calls self-revelation. And so I just want to read, like, a quick passage from this book, if I may. So this crucible of battle causes the hero to have a major revelation about who she really is. Much of the quality of the story is based on the quality of this self-revelation. And for a good self-revelation, you must first be aware that this step, like the need, which he talks about earlier, comes in two forms, psychological and moral. In a psychological self-revelation, the hero strips away the facade she has lived behind and sees herself honestly for the first time. The stripping away is not passive or easy, rather it's the most active, most difficult, most courageous act the hero performs in the entire story. Then the self-revelation should be moral as well. The hero doesn't just see herself in a new light. She has an insight about the proper way to act toward others. In effect, the hero realizes she was wrong, that she has hurt others, and must change. She then proves she has changed by taking new moral action. And I wanted to read that because I think that this is often a moment that is overlooked in the excitement of the climactic battle. But it's, in a sense, a lot more important than the climactic battle. So Diana's psychological self-revelation is that she's not just some clay-sculpted love child of Zeus and Hippolyta, but she was actually conceived as a weapon, the god killer, right? And that, like, wrecks her at a certain moment in her battle with Ares. But crucially, you know, in this revelation, she realizes that's not all that she is, right? Okay, she's the god killer, but she's also this idealistic Amazon, this woman that she's kind of grown into. Her moral self-revelation is to kind of reject Ares's view, his cynical view of absolutes. She accepts both the good and bad of humankind, and she wants to make the world a better place through love and compassion. But then her action is she just annihilates Ares. And I, right?
I believe in love.
Almost as if Zack Snyder wrote
it. And I just think, like, I think Jess talked about this a little bit in the battle with Ares at the end. I felt like that whole thing was really compressed and not totally satisfying to me. And I'm not saying I know what the story solution is for that movie. You'd probably have to change a lot of things to make that work better. And part of the difficulty.
Ooh,
I want to hear it in a minute. But I think part of the difficulty, too, is Diana is often portrayed as this character who is like Superman and Captain America, not necessarily the character that changes through the story, but the character that changes other people by being who she is. Right. And so if that was going to be their vision for her, I kind of wish they would have leaned into that part of it more, because, like, okay, so Steve dies and that's something she has to lose, but that's not something she sacrificed herself, you know, for this higher realization or whatever it was. Now, on the other hand, Carol's psychological self-revelation is, like, to see herself as more than this dutiful Kree soldier and more than who she once was on Earth. And this comes in her confrontation with the Supreme Intelligence, right? When she, it, like, culminates when she breaks free and releases her full power and she's glowing. And then she, like, frees her friends who are in custody, and she, and then it, that leads all into those climactic battles, right? And then she, like, learns how to fly, and she, and then she has that great moment with Yon-Rogg where she rejects his manipulations and gaslighting, and she just, like, I don't have anything to prove to you, right?
Bada bing, bada boom.
Right. But then where this really differs from the Wonder Woman movie and is better for me and resonates more with me is that her moral self-revelation is that she sees her own role in the current state of this, like, Kree-Skrull war, and she takes action to start fixing things. She vows to end the war, and she leaves her family, who she's only just found again and who she obviously loves very much, to go help the Skrulls, these refugees, find a new home. So I found that to be a much more satisfying, like, conclusion to the character arc, maybe. And so that's why, even though I think Wonder Woman is in a lot of ways, like, a stronger film, the ending kind of clinches it for me with Captain Marvel. I mean, what do you think about that, Jess?
Oh, okay. Yes. You said a lot of things that I had a lot of thoughts on.
Okay.
Which part do you want me to answer first?
Anyone you want.
I personally want to hear how you would fix the ending.
Yes, yes.
Same.
Oh, okay. So I know a lot of people were mad about David Thewlis's being cast as Ares. I don't think he needs to be recast. I just don't. When you see him falling from Olympus, shave the mustache. I think that would be fine. But I think if it would be cool if when she kills the general, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And she has to deal with the fact that that doesn't end the war.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Or if you really want to have Ares there and you really want him to be David Thewlis, have him then show up and be like, it wasn't me. It's not me. I didn't do any of this. I've just kind of watched them. See you around. And he vanishes.
Oh my God.
You know?
Yes.
Later, and then you set him up for a sequel.
That's a much bigger crisis for her.
So much better.
Right? Like, her whole thing is, so Diana's been, I noticed, I almost started counting how many times in Wonder Woman, somebody's like, Diana, no. And she's like, Diana, yes. And most of the time she's right. But that's the one time she's wrong. Mm. And she's really wrong. And the movie just negates it by being like, okay, you were wrong, but also Ares is here and you can fight him now.
Mm-hmm.
And now we...
You were wrong, but you're also right.
Right. And now we've gotten rid of, like, your biggest villain. So it would just be nice if she had to deal with the fact that killing one person didn't end the war.
You know?
That's the whole point mm-hmm. of, like, I thought that was why they said it in World War One, because it's not like World War Two where there is a bad guy. It's just... can I swear on this podcast?
Oh, go for it.
I was saying, it's a clusterfuck of a war.
Yes.
So you can't just kill one person and it's over. One thing that I think Wonder Woman did have going for it, though, was that they weren't sponsored by the U.S. Air Force. So they could do a general war is not mm-hmm. great take. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have been way more interesting for Captain Marvel if they had... done closer to, like, the Kree are bad and the Skrulls are bad, and there is no right side because war in general is bad, which it seemed what they were kind of trying to do with we're here to end wars, not fight them. But I don't think they could have gotten
funding. They didn't take that as far as they could have, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they could have gotten military funding if their message was that war is bad.
I'm wondering, actually, because so much of the film seems to be structured in, to lead to that particular type of ending, like, I'm wondering if, for Wonder Woman, if the initial draft of the film actually did have an ending like that, where, yeah, she kills...
Doesn't it seem like a Snyder change?
Yes, and he's on the writing team, so it probably him.
It yeah. definitely seems like something an executive... told the scriptwriter of, like, hey, this is, like, poignant and great and all, but, like, we need to tack on...
Where's the god battle?
Yeah. Where's the big hole in the sky?
Where's yeah. the kaboom? There's supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom!
Yeah. So I think that in that way, the ending of Wonder Woman almost undercuts, you know, some of the other stuff in the film.
And I really wonder how much of that and, like, how much... Because I'm realizing as we're talking that the things that I loved about Captain Marvel and the things that I loved about Wonder Woman were things that were done by the women on the team. And in Wonder Woman, there was only one woman. And it was Patty.
Yeah.
And all the story writers
were the executive
gross.
Wanted to cut the No Man's Land scene. She yeah. talked they about did. How hard she had to fight to keep that in.
That's yeah. like, it is insane to me to think about that movie without No
without
Man's
it.
Land.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Ugh,
it would
executives.
Be a trash movie.
The setup for that scene does make me want to laugh, though, when they're like, it's no man's land. No man can cross
right.
it. And all I feel is like, but I am no man.
Yes! Exactly.
I did have a Lord of the Rings flashback there as well.
And then a Nazgul gets stabbed in the face, it. And then you're like, wait a minute, what movie am I in?
Yeah. Other thoughts on all this?
I mean, I know we'll probably touch on it later, but... I did want to just point out that, like, yeah, the war is bad is definitely a message that could have been taken farther with Captain Marvel, for sure. But I will point out that I actually did like some of the subversive stuff they did with the Skrulls, because I know that the expectation, given the comics, is that the Skrulls are bad guys, mm-hmm. and I kind of liked... what they did with the Skrulls in that film as far as subverting expectations go. But I wholeheartedly agree. We could have had more of it, like, hey, war's not super great, guys.
Yeah, I think that the what they did with the Skrulls that you're talking about, you know, where they kind of subvert the expectation of who the villainous, you know, people are, is I think it did create a certain cognitive dissonance in a lot of viewers that is similar to the you know, what Carol was dealing with and sorting out what was going on and what's right and what's wrong and where her loyalty should be and so on. And I think that actually may have contributed to some degree to the bad reviews that Captain Marvel got.
It could have been neat if we had seen a little bit more of her time on Hala, because once she flips and is like, oh, the Kree are bad. A lot of times in the comics, like, both the Kree and the Skrulls create problems for a lot of people because the Skrulls are always infiltrating and messing things up. The Kree are always conquering and messing things up. And when she flips, it's hard for her to flip, but it would be nice to see what she's giving up apart from her human life that she just got back.
Yeah, especially when it comes to her and her teammates. Like, that's something that, and we touched on this a little bit in our sequel talk, but that's something that could have been expanded upon that the movie touches on a little bit, but kind of glosses over.
And that's one of the things that I loved about Wonder Woman is that we get to spend so much time with all of the Amazons. And I feel that if they hadn't given us that background, then, you know, I wouldn't have liked the movie as much. And if Captain Marvel had had a little bit more of that, I would like it even more than I already do.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, Captain Marvel, as it stands, is already like over 2 hours long, isn't it?
Wonder Woman's longer.
It's funny. It? Neither film feels very long to me.
Wonder Woman.
No,
yeah.
I just have fun the whole way
by
through.
The end.
Yeah. So unless anybody has another thought about all that rambling that I just did, let's move on to the next question. In thinking about the character arcs or the personal journeys of both Diana and Carol, which did you find more compelling and why is that? And then a follow-up question, in your opinion, did either of their stories deal with feminism more effectively than the other one? So let's start here with Amanda.
Okay. I think that they have very similar character arcs. I don't know. I really enjoyed watching both of their journeys, but I feel, and I'm just going to keep harping on the writing team from Wonder Woman because I know that people can unconsciously write sexism bullshit into their script. But I just feel very much like Wonder Woman suffered more from sexist undertones than Captain Marvel did, just from dialogue and from happenstances in the movie. The thing that comes to mind, my husband and I railed about this last night, was the "oh my god, a baby" moment. Yes, she should be like surprised to see a baby because she's probably never seen one before, but that reaction was so unnecessarily chipper, and it bothered me. I really liked Captain Marvel more in terms of her character arc and her growth, but I wonder also how much of that had to do with the ending, where it just kind of felt like a throwaway.
A throwaway in Wonder Woman, you mean?
In Wonder Woman, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Because by the end, all of a sudden, we just have this huge fight, and the concept of her just fighting for love just seems so silly and so counterproductive. Cheesy. And women can be strong and fierce and warriors and fight for love, and those things don't need to be, I don't know, they just, it felt like they just made her say a thing that a woman should say, I guess, because women have to save mankind because men can't save themselves.
Do you agree with the stuff I said about the end of their character arcs in these movies?
I do.
Okay. Okay, we're on the same page. So, Megan, what do you think about their character arcs or personal journeys, and which one dealt with feminism better?
I would have to agree that I think overall Wonder Woman's arc is better, but it stumbles at the end. Like, whereas Carol has a more satisfying ending to hers. With Wonder Woman, I love the fish out of water stuff. And we get that a little bit with Carol, but like so much of Diana's fish out of water sort of situation is kind of classic hero's journey. You know, it's kind of like Luke Skywalker leaving Tatooine for the first time and like, ooh, I'm in, or like leaving town to go to that cantina for the first time and, you know, being surrounded by scum and villainy before like exploring the galaxy. So, Wonder Woman arriving in London and being enamored with all the cool things. That scene where she's eating ice cream and she looks the seller in the eye and says, "You should be very proud of yourself." I felt that in my soul.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I actually really liked the baby part because, a baby is something she's never seen before. And trying on the different outfits, like, I feel like these are all kind of classic fish out of water scenarios that the movie hits, like, for the perfect amount of time without dwelling on them too much. While also, as I mentioned earlier, slowly exposing her to the darker nature of the world as well, racism and sexism and you know, the horrors of war, you know, because when she's younger, she wants to fight like everybody else. And her mother strongly discourages her from doing that. And over the course of the movie, she comes to learn why. Not only is just war terrible, but also the meaning, the reason for her creation and everything like that. And I concur that the ending of, like, I believe in love. I was like, if I wanted to watch an episode of Sailor Moon, I would be watching Sailor Moon right now. And, because she says all the time, I fight for love and justice. And it feels out of place given what we've been leaning towards this whole movie. So I feel like it stumbles. With Captain Marvel, it's more of a kind of a journey of rediscovery as opposed to, like, seeing everything for the first time. It's more about reconciling who you were and moving forward with that. Once you come to terms with it, then it is about, like, I'm learning about the world for the first time. And again, their journeys and their attitudes toward their journeys are very different because Carol is, you know, she starts off as a soldier and has obviously a certain perception of the world and the way things work, but she's also kind of a galaxy warrior. And so, like, being true, a lot of the truth is being kept from her, but she hasn't been sheltered from the world. And so, like, even though they're both going on journeys of discovery, they're different types of discovery. And their way of reconciling who they really are is very different. And granted, they shouldn't have to be the same because they're two different characters. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, I would just to make a long story short, I agree. I think Carol's ending is more satisfying. But I think because Diana has the more classic hero's journey, I feel like I enjoy that one a little bit more, even though it stumbles at the end. Although I do have to give props to Captain Marvel for because we are all origin storied out by the time the movie came out. I will give it props for trying to go about it in a different way.
Yeah, that was an interesting. I really like the opening shot of Captain Marvel in that sense, and how they kind of teased out her origin over, you know, the course of the film, as opposed to just, like, doing it at the beginning or doing more, like, traditional flashbacks. Interesting. Okay, so Jessica, which character arc did you find more compelling? Why? And which of these films do you think dealt with feminism more effectively?
Well, I loved both of them. And I also really liked the baby scene, and the ice cream scene is one of my favorite moments, I think, in the entire movie. But I will say I found Carol's arc easier to identify with in a lot of ways because, and I know this is something Brie Larson got a lot of flack for, people said that she didn't show any emotion. But what I thought was fascinating is that she's constantly being told that she's too emotional. Mm-hmm. And she's always told, like, they're both always told what they're doing is wrong. But whereas Carol is like, Diana's like, I don't care. Carol tries to adhere to what her commander tells her to do. Mm-hmm. So if she shows, like, the slightest bit of humor or smiles or even not even raises her voice, just disagrees with Jude Law, Yon-Rogg.
Stop being so hysterical, Carol.
Right, exactly. And she's barely doing anything. And that's something that I think a lot of women can identify with. So I found that meaningful till at the end when she's like, your opinion doesn't actually matter to me. And I liked that a lot. Something I would have liked from both of them more is more interaction with female characters. Diana gets a lot of this on Themyscira, and then once she comes to London, the only woman she interacts with is Etta Candy, who I love because I love Etta Candy, and it was nice to see her. But also, now we're not going to see her anymore because we're taking place in the 80s and then, I assume, today. So Etta's dead, and that's sad. But I mean, I guess it makes sense that she wouldn't interact with, you know, any women on her team because it's supposed to be weird that she's a woman going to war. But it would have been nice to have her with a scene with Dr. Poison. And there's honestly no reason that Carol couldn't have interacted with more women. I mean, it was really cool to have her with Nick Fury. But the best part was that they let Maria go up in the spaceship with them because... Yeah. Seeing her interacting with another woman that whole time was just, it was very nice.
I think that it was great that they incorporated her as much as they did with flying the, and you know, she had that little dogfight with Gemma Chan's character.
Yes.
Minerva. And that was really cool. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that for me, I was able to relate more to Diana's journey, just in the sense that, you know, her story is essentially one of growing up and dealing with, you know, not only like her self-actualization, but like the disillusionment that comes from seeing the ugly side of life. And, you know, I've always been kind of an idealist, and the moments near the end when Diana strays towards like hopelessness, cynicism, anger, and despair, those things really resonated with me. But then, of course, it just kind of didn't go totally well after that. And I think that each movie dealt with like the subject matter in different ways, you know, being a woman in a man's world, or, you know, how they addressed, you know, feminist concerns. I mean, like Wonder Woman tended to showcase like these moments of sexism in humorous ways, where she's like a fish out of water, or she's naive about certain, or she just, you know, is being exposed to certain things in Steve Trevor's world for the first time. You know, all the moments you pointed out with the ice cream were hilarious. And then there's the like the montage where she's trying on all the clothes and she's like, how do people fight in this? She's like kicking and they're freaking out because she's like taking off her jacket or whatever. Whereas, you know, in Captain Marvel, she has like, I didn't detect any sexism in her like Kree life. And maybe you can point something out to me if I'm missing it. But like in her life on, I mean, other than Yon Rogg, the way that he treated her and how he was in a way encouraging her to just be like, to have sort of traditionally masculine traits all the time. But in her life on Earth, she had this constant uphill battle to get the things that she wanted to be taken seriously. And then even after she's a pilot, she's not allowed to fly combat missions, right? And then she's manipulated by the Kree. And so the point being, if Wonder Woman showed us how backwards and absurd sexism can be, Captain Marvel kind of showed us how abusive and damaging it can be. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's a really good way of putting it. And I think, again, these are two different movies and they go about framing sexism in very different ways. But I think something to kind of keep in mind, and this is definitely something where Justice League probably stumbled quite a bit, is that because even though they're both period pieces, by talking about sexism as it existed in the early 1900s, it could very well be easy to dismiss the sexism in the movie of, oh, that's a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel, even though it takes place in the 90s, is bringing sexism to the here and now. And I think maybe part of the reason why maybe people were a little upset about it is because we like to pretend these things don't exist anymore. And so by saying she's a victim of sexism in the here and now or in modern times, that maybe makes people upset or feel like the movie has an agenda, whereas a movie taking place in the early 1900s that deals with sexism, it's a lot easier for people to say, oh, well, it's not like that anymore. So maybe that's one of the reasons why Captain Marvel gets a little bit more flack. I don't know.
You might be onto something there. What do you think, Jess?
I agree. I think it's really easy to paint portraits of this was a problem, but it's not anymore. I think it's why Green Book was so successful. And maybe more modern movies that deal with race today are not successful, to, you know, totally flip the script on what we're talking about.
It's almost like the general movie public likes movies where it's like, ah, glad we solved that problem.
We can feel good about ourselves now, yeah?
I also wanted to shout out how great of a job Chris Pine does as a pitch perfect Steve Trevor. Because that's a really hard role to do well. I've seen so many jackass Steve Trevors, and he's so good. And even when Steve, like his Steve does a sexism, it's like
he does benevolent sexism.
Like when he's trying to protect Diana, and he does it many times before he realizes, like, oh, she's better at this than me. And then after that, he doesn't shield her anymore. He's kind of like, okay, she's going to go in. And then we'll follow.
I think the turning point there was that moment where they're like accosted by those guys in the alleyway. And he's like, stay back. And then she deflects a bullet. And he goes, maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Like, wait, yeah. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I feel like Steve Trevor's the perfect PSA. We can call it Steve Does a Sexism.
I thought those two actors had a really great rapport too. Like, they just made that relationship work somehow when I think it could have been incredibly cheesy. Like, even just starting off when he wakes up on the beach and she goes, you're a man. And she's like all surprised. And he's like, do I not look like one? Like that just from the get go, I think they had a really good, that relationship just worked in the movie somehow.
Yeah, and I've seen so many, like, sleazy takes on Steve Trevor when they wake up on Themyscira and are like, oh, so many hot ladies here. Welcome. I'm the only man. They kind of eliminated that by, you know, putting a war in there and him being under questioning. But it was still nice that he respected all of them and treated Diana as an equal. I love that, because he should, because she is more capable of him most of the time. And I like that he eventually came to learn that.
Yeah,
I agree. He's great.
So what themes, including feminist themes, stood out to you in each film? How do they compare? Do you think these movies covered the same ground in different ways? Or did one film tackle important things that the other did not? And which movie do you think presented a feminist perspective more effectively, and why is that? A lot of questions and follow-up questions. Let's start with Amanda this time.
So I think that they each cover a few themes that are similar in terms of breaking the trope of the helpless damsel in distress situation. But I also feel like they both capture the idea of, I don't know how to make this into a succinct theme. I need more coffee. The idea of finding yourself and the fact that the journey to finding oneself is different, but it's about it. It's the destination and not necessarily the journey, which is not, I think, a typical story. You would say it's the journey and not the destination. But for these women, they can't come into their own in so many different ways until they reach that destination.
And I think, I don't remember who it was that said earlier something about the fact that both of these movies are really about each of these characters growing into who they are, or even discovering, you know, who they are, which is an interesting parallel. Megan.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like out of the two movies, Captain Marvel actually probably had a more, this is going to sound weird to say, but kind of like more of a corporate feminism. Not agenda, like, oh, we're going to get feminists in to like this movie, and we're going to, like, it not so much that, but definitely it seemed like it was trying to capture a feminist perspective in a weird way. But, like, I don't necessarily know if it succeeded as well as Wonder Woman does, because, like, Captain Marvel seems to be trying to make a feminist film, whereas Wonder Woman just made a superhero period piece that happened to be about a woman. And that's what happens when you have a woman director.
Yeah.
Like, amazing how that kind of works. But again, I'm not trying to, like, single out Captain Marvel and, like, see, this is what happens when Disney tries to do a feminism or something like that. I don't want to sound like that, because I very much enjoy both these films. But I think as far as themes go, Wonder Woman's theme kind of boils down to, like, her ending monologue at the end is, like, the discovery that people have both the capacity for good and evil, and it's up to everybody to choose, you know, the type of person that you want to be and the type of actions that you undertake. And Wonder Woman chooses to believe and fight for all that is good, and which is a great message. And in that, you can touch on a multitude of things, like sexism and racism and the horrors of war. And it seems to be more of, like, kind of a macro, we're looking at humanity as a whole, whereas Carol's, like, the themes of Captain Marvel seem to be more internally focused, of knowing your worth and being content with that. If, like, I know that both films, both characters have to reconcile who they are and come to terms with it, but that seems to be more thematically important in Captain Marvel than it does in Wonder Woman. So, like, it's weird. It's because it's like, One film seems to be, like, focusing on the macro, and one is like, no, the individual. So that's sort of my take on it. Neither one is, like, better. Neither approach is better than the other. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
Yeah. Interesting. Jess, what are your thoughts on themes and feminist perspective here?
I kind of agree. I definitely agree. I don't know why I said kind of. That's me being a game master too often, where I'm like, you are kind of correct. Sorry. About the macro versus the internal. One thing that I was thinking while you were just talking was interesting is that both film productions were in a very weird situation with these characters, because Wonder Woman had already been it actually in the same way. They both were introducing these incredibly powerful characters. Wonder Woman had already been introduced for a total of 3 minutes in Batman versus Superman.
Best part of Batman v Superman.
But they were introducing these very powerful characters in the past and then had to also explain why they haven't been in any of the other movies when they could both clearly solve all of the problems.
Right. Shoot, these characters are so OP.
Right. So, like, why? And I'm sorry, that's going to go back to my, I think that Wonder Woman should have learned that she was wrong. And she would have been like, oh, maybe have some self-doubt. And then maybe that's why she wasn't always jumping in to save everybody, because she didn't know. But I think the theme, a more feminist theme, came about in Captain Marvel, because she, whereas, like, Will said, Diana is growing up and learning that not everyone is good, actually. I think a lot of her, I'm sorry, I'm so rambly because I have a lot of thoughts.
Oh, and don't worry
I'm
about
like
it.
Hopped up on coffee.
Ramble on.
So a lot of, I think when Diana first comes to London, she is under the impression that people are doing things because they want to do them, not because they're in certain roles, because society forces them to be in them. And I think her learning that people do things because they have to versus because they want to, but also that sometimes people want to do things that aren't good, and it doesn't mean that there's a corrupting influence. It just means that people are flawed, but also society itself is flawed, is a big thing for her.
Yeah, she spends so much of the movie being like, these people are doing bad things because of Ares, but once I defeat Ares, they will be free to be good.
Right. And it's like, no, they're doing this because their country's making them go to war and they got drafted. Like, maybe, you know. Whereas Carol is being held back. And I think that's more relatable, that a lot of women, I mean, we talk about the glass ceiling. You could talk about a bajillion metaphors for
the inhibitor.
White.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say non-cis straight white men, people who are not that, being held back by more than just one person, by
institutions,
structures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for her, it's an inhibitor on her neck. But breaking through that is really powerful and inspiring.
I think
And so I think that's a feminist theme, and that is breaking through the inhibitor.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking in terms... Did you have something more, Jess?
No, I just didn't know if anything I said made sense.
I think we're all in that state of, like, I don't know if I've had enough coffee or too much coffee.
It's like, I have a lot of thoughts.
Describes my existence today, for sure.
Yeah.
Can I jump in?
Absolutely.
Oh, I just wanted to reiterate that I agree with Jess. But also, I think... And in listening to Jess, I was like sitting here and I was like, oh, I think I came to a realization. I had an epiphany.
Ooh.
I think that the reason those scenes, those fish out of water scenes, while I liked some of them really bothered me, is because I kept asking myself, why is no one telling her anything?
Mm.
And when you brought up her, you know, she thinks that Ares is controlling everyone. Why did no one talk to her? Like I was so frustrated that it wasn't that they weren't correcting her. It was just that no one would explain anything to her. And I felt like that was creating this weird codependent, like, don't worry, you're just a little girl sort of relationship.
But at the same time, if somebody tried to tell her, would she have listened? And even if she did, would it have come off as mansplaining? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. We didn't get an opportunity to see it.
She does finally get something explained to her when one of the men is like, I wanted to be an actor, but I'm the wrong color. When she's asking, like, why is he?
Yeah.
He is a shooter who can't shoot. And I think that's when it's the first time that somebody's told her, like, we don't get to choose what we do.
Yeah.
And she's like, what?
Or when the chief points out that she's like, who took that from your people? And... He points to Steve and it was like his people.
They did. Yeah. Those moments were so beautiful, though. I wish maybe there had been more. And not even Steve talking to her. Like, why couldn't Etta have talked to her?
That's a great point, for sure.
Why couldn't we have more Etta?
Right? Etta should have her own movie.
Diana and Etta are best friends in the comics. Can we just have them be?
guys. Why, like... I know that, like, the sequel is going to take place in the 80s, but what if for the first half of the movie, it's still an early 1900s period?
It's just Etta and Diana.
It's just Etta and Diana going on adventures and having fun and having, yeah.
We can have Granny Etta in the 80s. Yeah. That would be great.
That'd be awesome.
And they're still going on adventures and it's great.
Yes!
I'd be in
She
for
could
that.
Potentially
Absolutely.
Be alive. Just very much not super alive.
Just not super alive.
If she has passed away, I don't see any reason why she couldn't time travel like Steve. Like, I don't know
why
how the time
be
travel stuff is going to work. I see no reason why Etta couldn't come with him.
Ghost Etta.
Fair plan. Fair enough.
I think it's a fake Steve.
Oh.
I think it's an illusion. Maxwell Lord's an illusionist.
Interesting. Spoiler alert.
Okay. I haven't seen the movie. movie.
Well, I think you've really covered this question pretty well. I mean, I just found it interesting that they had similar themes of compassion in addition to like the self-discovery or self-actualization, because they kind of have to both overcome some cognitive dissonance about some very fundamental beliefs. And then they both kind of embrace, you know, Captain Marvel embraces compassion for the Skrulls. She fights for them, in doing so releases her full power. Compassion is already a big part of who Diana is, but she like almost lets go of it. Ares tries to kind of shatter her beliefs about mankind's essential goodness. But then as a result, she actually adopts a bigger picture perspective than even Ares does. And embracing compassion as a guiding principle. So those are just like some similarities that I saw. I don't think that's as deep of a dive as what all of you just said, but it was something that stood out to me and interesting.
No, that's a great point.
I mean, I don't see those themes in other superhero movies, really, though. Am I missing
something?
Because
they're not about women.
Yeah, usually. That's the thing. Usually when love is a part of a male character's journey, it's less about love of humanity as a whole and more about the love of one particular person. Like,
it's love about his girlfriend so they can fridge her and then have a vengeance.
Oh my God.
I was actually thinking exactly of The Matrix while I was saying that. And so you've pointed out a great, because like at the end, when like at the end of the first Matrix, when he's saved through the power of love, it's the power of love for one person. And then, yeah, Trinity gets fridged in a later movie. So that's incredible that you pointed that out.
What Will brought up, though, brings up, I remember, I don't know who first said this or where I first heard it, but it was the quick and dirty way to explain the difference between the big DC three, which was, if you want to stop a crime, call Batman. If you want to stop a meteor, call Superman. If you want to stop a war, call Wonder Woman.
Ooh. Yeah.
I like that. I like it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Interesting. Okay. So with all of this said, these two films, as superhero films led by strong women protagonists, what can these two franchises learn from each other? Megan.
First and foremost, Marvel, don't fire Patty Jenkins, you idiots.
Yes.
I think that's lesson number one.
Yeah. Good lesson.
But I think, and I don't know, maybe we'll see if they take this to heart when it comes to Black Widow. But and granted, I don't think a film should shy away from having a feminist message or anything like that. But I hope that by looking at Wonder Woman, like Marvel films could be like, oh, okay, so a female superhero movie doesn't have to be a capital letters female superhero movie. It could just be a superhero movie about a female character. Like, yep. It doesn't have to be, like, it doesn't have to check all these marketing boxes of, like, well, it has to have this and it has to have this in order to be a feminist movie. Like, it could just be a movie about a woman. And I'm hoping that we're going to get this with Marvel movies just more in general, because I love dabbling in multiple genres. Like, I'm really excited for the next Doctor Strange movie, because it's leaning into horror. And so I'm like, yes. Ooh, yes. Tell me more. I'm a little...
And they have Sam Raimi directing it now, so that's exciting.
Yeah, my brain has melted.
Evil Dead fame, Drag Me to Hell, etc.
I'm so excited that he's returning to the superhero genre. It's been so long. But like, this brings up a whole nother discussion. I'm worried about like some people leaving the project and then coming back. But that's like an ongoing thing with Marvel films, because Marvel films, regardless of what they're trying to do, have to adhere to certain parameters. And that's a bummer. Yeah. So hopefully they can look at Wonder Woman and be like, oh, a film about a female superhero can be anything that a film about a male superhero can be, because regardless of gender, they're a hero, and that's all it has to be. Whereas I feel like the DCEU could just learn a lot from Marvel's success, just generally speaking. But yeah, kind of the same. There's so much. Captain Marvel's ending, and we've talked about this to death, was so cathartic. And it's just a shame that Wonder Woman didn't have that sense of catharsis at the end. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like they could look at Carol's journey and be like, oh, okay, well, a female superhero doesn't have to prove herself, doesn't have anything to prove to anybody. And I kind of feel like Patty Jenkins knew this, and the women working on the film knew this. They knew that, like, they could just make a movie. And it was other executives that were like, that imposed these other things that we didn't like about it onto the film.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So maybe Carol's journey of, like, I don't have anything to prove to you, could teach those male executives that maybe, hey, back off and just let the ladies make a movie already.
Amanda, as superhero films led by strong women protagonists, what can these two franchises learn from each other? So that, or any reactions to what Megan said?
I totally agree with Megan, 100%. I also feel like that DC could really learn from Marvel in that Zack Snyder's one-hit wonder was Watchmen, and everything else he's made since then is terrible, and they should just fire him. It's that simple. And
they kind of did.
Well, they let him stay on Wonder Woman. Maybe not as a director, but I think that these movies, you know, if they combined the things that I loved about each of them separately, it would be the perfect movie. Because the thing that I keep going back to with Wonder Woman is that it was a beautiful film. And folks like my parents, for example, they say that my mom doesn't like superhero movies. And what that means to me is the kind of MCU film. When you go into an MCU movie, you know what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And Wonder Woman took that concept that Marvel has developed for their films and flipped it on its head and said, look, I made a beautiful movie. Watch it. And as someone who studied film, as someone who loves so many genres of film, Wonder Woman blew every expectation I had of a quote-unquote superhero movie out of the water. And I think that if these two franchises could just maybe like compromise and each create a film that takes little pieces of the other, they would each make such beautiful movies. If Captain Marvel in the future, or any MCU movie, embraced Patty Jenkins' kind of gorgeous cinematic direction, we would have movies that not only reach the people that they usually reach, but it would reach everybody. And it would show film buffs and critics and the people who make a living writing or watching films realize that there's nothing subpar about the superhero genre. And I think that for people assuming like us, people who love these heroes and everything they stand for, they deserve that. Like, we deserve to have gorgeous films, not just superhero women, but we deserve to have just gorgeous films that have women in them or have people of color in them. I think they both need to do better intersectional feminism work. I think that our actors of color deserve to be more than just a side character. And I talked about that in the Captain Marvel podcast we did earlier with you, Will. But I think that if they just focused on making a good movie and not appealing to the, you know, modicum of the population that loves just superhero movies in general, they would just be better and they would be gorgeous. And you'd see it and say, that's an Oscar movie right there. You know, it's not a
interesting
green book.
Could you imagine a superhero movie winning Best Picture? I can't imagine it right now.
One day.
Yeah.
I was rooting for
Black Panther. And they deserve it.
Yeah.
Oh, Black Panther.
That was like, such a good movie. So good.
In some ways, like, Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins sort of did that. Like, you know, it was like, hey, I just want to make a dark and gritty movie, and it just happens to be a superhero movie. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be nice
yeah,
if
absolutely.
Making a good film came first.
I was so wowed by Batman Begins when it came out because I was like, oh, my God, Batman is finally in the real world. And that was, like, groundbreaking for me at that time, you know, because... Anyway, we're not talking about
As
Batman.
Someone from Chicago, those movies were really distracting, though.
You're like, I can't focus same. On anything.
All those oh climactic God, fights, I was like, oh, that's right by the opera.
I know where that is. I can't go there right now because quarantine.
So, Jess, Jessica, what do you think these franchises can learn from each other?
I agree with everything Meg and Amanda were saying. I think... Now that we've gotten past the initial, oh no, so much money is riding on this, if these movies fail, we can't make movies starring women anymore, is over, and both of them did make money, so thank goodness, we can actually hopefully give the directors and the writers room to play and room to explore, and there's not so much pressure riding on them. I would like to have more than just these two characters. I mean, I know we're getting Black Widow, but it would be nice if, you know, Captain Marvel didn't have to be the woman in the Marvel movies and Wonder Woman mm-hmm. didn't have to be the woman for DC. It would be nice to get Angela or Kamala Khan or Squirrel Girl or anybody else. So that they just didn't have to represent them. And it would be nice to get more diverse relationships in there. Like when I was watching Wonder Woman, whenever they would show Hippolyta next to a Black woman, I was like, oh, is that Philippus? But then they never said a name. So I was just there looking through the credits later. And I don't think anyone was billed as Philippus because maybe they want to cast somebody famous in that role later. But it would be nice if we could, you know, have Black and people of Black actors and actors of color with named roles and have queer relationships that aren't just queer baited relationships. Like,
as I think Captain Marvel clearly was in this movie, honestly.
Yes. Yes. She was raising a child with her best friend and roommate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amanda and I are messaging back and forth saying, give Carol a girlfriend.
Girlfriend. Yeah. And the fact that they initially took like a queer scene away from Valkyrie, but made a big deal. I mean, this is another movie entirely. But we're like, Valkyrie's bi. Like, yeah, she is. But you took away her moment. You know who's bi in the comics? Wonder Woman.
Yup.
Wonder Woman. A girlfriend.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like Carol has had girlfriend. I said Carol. Oh my God. Diana has had girlfriends on Themyscira. And there's a part where later Steve is like, oh, so you've never met a man. So you're a virgin. And she's like, I've never met a man. That's not to say I've never been in love and I've never known pleasure. And it's like, yes, thank you. So it would be nice to show different relationships, different people. I want to see Carol mentor Kamala Khan.
That'd be great.
That's
my entire spoiler alert if you haven't listened to the episode yet, but that's my entire pitch.
I have loved Kamala Khan since her comics first started coming out, and I have a lot of the first year's worth of those comics. And I remember after she first acquires her powers, let's just say, she has like this vision with Carol in it as Captain Marvel, right? Because she just looks up to her so much, and then, you know, you're not quite sure whether that really happened or not. But I think it would just be a great way to tie in those franchises later if they can do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've actually, I was going to ask about how they could improve in their sequels, but we kind of have already talked about all of that. So let's get down to the battle.
It's time for a death battle!
The part you thought this whole episode was going to be about, Megan.
But no, I do think these characters probably would not be inclined to fight each other if they actually met somehow. But if they absolutely had to, who do you think would win and why? Or
Carol.
How might... Yeah, she's pretty powerful. Or how might these two find another way to resolve their differences? Do you think the heroine's journey or A Feminist Perspective offer any ways for superhero leading ladies to resolve conflict that does not involve super punching? Jess.
I think if it was a knockout drag out fight, like if it was, you know, mind control or something, which is what always happens when Wonder Woman fights anybody good. It would be Carol. It's basically what happens when Wonder Woman fights Superman. Like, she's very close. She's a better combatant. Mm-hmm. She's a better warrior. She's the most trained mm-hmm. warrior in the DC universe. But she can't photon blast out of her hands. And also, Carol could just fly her into space where she cannot breathe.
Good point.
I think both of them have such potential to see the good in everyone, particularly Wonder Woman. That's her strength. Mm. But Carol is also really good at it, too. That they would resolve their differences without fighting and work things out. It doesn't necessarily have to be feminist. It's just that both of them, what makes them special is that they see the good in everybody and they want to bring that good out. Like, one of Carol's best friends is Jessica Jones because she's always trying to help Jessica be out of this pit of misery
that she's in.
And so I think that they would end up best buds.
Now that's a comic or a movie that I would love to see.
I would love that. Yeah. There's one comic issue where it's pretty much just a sleepover between Carol, Jessica Drew, and Jessica Jones. And I love it so much.
Oh my God. Awesome.
Girls being girls being girls being girls. I imagine.
Amanda, what do you think about these two coming to blows or how they would resolve their differences?
I 1,000,000% agree with Jessica. Carol would win if it came down to a knockout, drag-out fight. But I really think that just based on who they are as people, not women, just people, that they would talk things out because they've both seen what war can do and they've both seen what kind of negative implications violence can bring. So I don't think they would come to that if it was up to them. I really genuinely think they would find a way to just settle their differences however they would have differences. But I also know that looking at them right now, like in our world as it is at the moment, is also really a different story than maybe it was even a year ago, just because we're all isolated and we're seeing that countries with women at the helm as leaders are winning the battle against the silent enemy that is COVID. So I think that that's also informing my idea that they wouldn't actually fight each other.
Interesting. Yeah, I was just going to say that I think the conversation between those two as they resolve whatever the situation is would actually be really entertaining because Carol has that like snark and Diana is so like forthright and, a little more sober. At least it seems that way to me. So that would be really fun. Megan, what do you think?
I thoroughly agree that I don't think ideologically necessarily these two would ever be on opposing sides because they're both so compassionate and fight for what is right. But you know what I do think would happen? I do think that if Carol and Wonder Woman were face to face, I do think they'd kind of want to spar. Like not like maliciously or anything like that. But
it'd be fun.
But yeah, as we pointed out earlier in this episode, like the first thing we see both characters doing in their films after the opening is wanting to fight. So I actually think Carol would love the chance to go to blow to blow with Wonder Woman.
I think you're right.
Just for funsies.
And there's that great moment in Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Overbearing Marketing, that when she's like fighting and she gets knocked back and she like steps up and she like grins for like a second because she's enjoying it. Yeah, love
that.
That was great.
I imagine that both of these ladies throughout all of their adventures, you know, they fight a lot of people and they come to blows with a lot of people, but I don't imagine much of them face a challenge all that often. So I think fighting somebody as powerful as Wonder Woman or as powerful as Captain Marvel would actually be really fun for the both of them. I do concur that I think Carol would come out ahead, but I think they'd both have a good time. And honestly, yeah, I mean, earlier, if we're talking about how to resolve any sort of issues that they do come to, I mean, we were just saying earlier, we'd love for both of these characters to get a girlfriend at some point. What if they just, you know, got a cup of coffee together and started chatting? See what they have in common.
Ooh. Nice.
I'm here for this.
I see a crossover happening. I see a crossover happening.
I need to call, I need to call my buddy Zach Wilson, because he has a podcast called Ships in the Night, and see, maybe they'd be willing to do an episode about Carol and Diana.
Ooh, compelling. Love it.
I love your point about them sparring, because I'm going to be a comic dork again. Carol always spars with She-Hulk, because she's the only one who can keep up with her. So I think she would love to try out Diana's different fighting style.
Although I will point out that even though I think Carol's the more powerful character, I think the movie Wonder Woman had better choreographed fights. Just saying.
I think that's probably true. Interesting.
Because she actually has to fight, like, in a fighting style. She can't just blast everybody around.
And I'm a sucker for a lady with a sword. I'll tell you that right now. Something about... I don't know. I think you're right about the choreography. I mean, it's not that I disliked the fight scenes in Captain Marvel.
Oh, no, they were great. But, like, I feel just, I mean, Amanda, you keep talking about how beautiful a film Wonder Woman is. And I really noticed it during the scene right after No Man's Land where they're fighting in the town. Like, I was just like, holy cow, these fights look amazing. Just the camera work and the actual fighting choreography.
The battle on Themyscira is gorgeous too.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, and I love how the Amazons just jump off the cliff and, like, you know, shoot their arrows into the rocks. That was amazing.
And I have never really looked into it, but I bet that's also a reason why they cast Gal Gadot, because she has combat training.
Exactly. Again, nothing against Brie Larson or about the way the fight scenes in Captain Marvel were shot. I just think that they look a little better in Wonder Woman, that's all.
Yeah, they're also
just
different.
A lot of Marvel fight scenes are kind of samey.
Yeah,
good point.
Wait, can you repeat that? What was that?
I said a lot of Marvel fight scenes in general, and I think this is the way that they are structured, are sort of samey. So they fit the Marvel brand.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good point. Maybe that's it. It was just Wonder Woman was so different compared to like, just looking at these two films back to back. Maybe it was just because Wonder Woman's felt so different because it wasn't adhering to the Marvel brand that I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for the visual themes and the look that was created in the Snyderverse, because I would say that, you know, Wonder Woman fits visually with the other movies, but, you know, they just haven't quite managed to get the substance behind the visuals in a lot of cases, in my opinion, in the DC movies.
Yeah.
So, but with that said, I mean, I just want to wrap up here. What are your final thoughts about Captain Marvel versus Wonder Woman? You know, anything that we've touched on before, any final thoughts you have about these characters and how they compare or complement each other? Can we start with Megan?
Both of these movies are an absolute joy to watch. And as we've reiterated time and time again through this discussion, now that the pressure is off, let's see more female-led superhero movies so that these two don't have to be the end-all, be-all of female representation in the superhero genre. That being said, again, I enjoy them both for different reasons, and I find them both incredibly moving for different reasons. The scene where Carol, you know, stands up at the very end of the movie when she really discovers who she is, like, I thought that was cheesy in the theater, but, like, upon reflection and rewatches, it moves me in a way that a lot of Marvel movies don't move me. And I already talked a little bit about how Wonder Woman brought me to tears when I was in the theater. So just more, please. And also, hire me for the Captain Marvel sequel that I pitched. Hire me to write that
yes.
screenplay.
It was a great pitch. It was a great pitch. Amanda, what are your final thoughts?
I just have to agree with Megan. But also, just give us more movies. I mean, we've proven with films like Black Panther and Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel that you don't have to hire a straight white dude to be a superhero and make money or receive accolades. We deserve to see more faces that don't all look like, as much as I love Chris Pine, they don't all have to look like Chris Pine to sell your movie. Mm-hmm. And the fan base has proven in going to the movies, which is probably the point of making a movie, that it works and that we love the heroes and the stories, and we deserve more representation on screen in every way that we can represent on screen. And that's all I got on that.
Well said. Jessica, final thoughts.
I'm gonna say yes to what Amanda and Meg said, and also, please, just more women and non-binary superheroes. Let us be people who are more than serving the growth of a male character. Like, let us be the one who grows, kind of the way that Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel did in this, instead of just facilitating Peter Quill growing up over and over and over again, or Iron Man growing up over and over and over again. And let's hear different stories. Like, hire female writers, hire queer writers, hire writers of color, hire non-binary writers, like, just so that we can get different perspectives, because we get, I mean, the hero's journey does not have to be the same every time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with anything that you said. And I think that, you know, for me, I really enjoyed both of these movies a lot, you know, for different reasons. We've gone over it at length. And I hope that what you're saying comes to pass. I mean, I think that the past few years of these movies have proved that there is so much opportunity to give us these different voices and these different faces and these different characters that we haven't seen a heck of a lot of, you know, over the years in film. And, you know, I think it's even possible that the superhero genre or format is maybe a really good stepping stone for films in general, because these tend to be big event movies that a lot of people come to see. And to me, if you can start to kind of expand the collective consciousness in these movies that have such broad appeal, that can only bode well, you know, for the rest of the film industry in general. At least that's what I hope is going to happen. And I also am thinking that at this point, the execs at the studios have seen enough dollar signs from these movies that, you know, that it won't be as much of an obstacle in the future. At least, you know, here's hoping to that.
Yeah, to put it succinctly, representation matters. So act like it, Marvel, and act like it, DC.
Yeah.
Yeah, representation gets you more money.
And you want more money, don't you? Yes. So yeah, so I'm you know, I'm hopeful that this is the beginning of a solid trend here. And at least from the movies that Marvel has and shows now that they have planned in the future, it looks like we are going to get some expansion as far as that concerned. So hopefully that's the case. But I want to thank all three of you for being here so much. I do want to give you an opportunity to plug, you know, your shows and your work that you do. Can we start with Meg?
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I host and produce a podcast called No Love Lost, which is a Lost retrospective podcast where my co-host Will Link loves Lost and I don't. And we talk about it. I also have a YouTube channel called Silver Screams, where my roommate Katie Cullen and I talk about horror things. And I am a member of Rooster Team Radio, a podcast where me and my co-hosts talk about Rooster Teeth Productions. So go check those out if you're interested.
Please do. Jessica, where can people find your work and you online?
You can find all of my games, adventures, and supplements on my website, jessicamarkramwrites.com. You can find me on Twitter at miss_jess03. And you can see me stream games at several different channels, but my own is twitch.tv/angrynerdgirl. And I run games on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern. I run Three Flings, an adventure of three tieflings going through the Uncaged Anthology. Mm-hmm. I also stream games on Sigil Entertainment's channel on Saturdays and the Onyx Paths channel on Tuesdays and occasionally on Wednesdays.
Fantastic. So Amanda, please tell our listeners where they can find you online and your work.
Sure. I write for whoever will pay me. So you can find my work all over the place. But if you want to follow along on my journey of being a freelance journalist in this very bizarre time, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at FinnWrites. And that's basically where you can find me anywhere on the internet.
Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for being on to talk about Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel. And thank you to our listeners for listening to this and any of our episodes. If you have a moment, please go to Apple Podcasts or your choice of podcasting platform and give us a 5-star review and or rating. That really does help out the show. You can find our show online on Twitter at Mecha Dragon Show. Same for Instagram. We have a Facebook group called Mecha Dragon. And you can reach us by email if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for topics for future episodes. MechaDragonShow@gmail.com. So once again, thanks everybody so much for being here. And this is Captain Will signing out. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod, from incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.